You are listening to Larry Connors, USA.
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth!
This is Larry Connors, USA. Larry Connors, USA.
In a time when millions of people in the United States are looking for deep, systemic solutions to our crises of mass evictions, unemployment, and lack of health care, in el espíritu del pueblo and out of a love for all people, I hereby second the nomination of Senator Bernard Sanders of Vermont for President of the United States of America.
August the 19th, 2020, did AOC Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez just nominate Bernie Sanders for President of the United States? Yes, she did. She did it last night at the Democrat National Convention. It is all part of the process. A lot of folks didn't understand it, though. They're like, what? What? And she didn't really name Biden at any point. But it is part of the process, since he was a second vote getter, to offer a presidential nomination. And, of course, Sanders has already endorsed Biden. Ocasio-Cortez had originally endorsed Sanders and then eventually switched her support to Biden. And you know what? AOC did not like the reviews and the press coverage of her. She was upset, saying, I wasn't treated fairly by members of the media. Lady, you just found out what Donald Trump has been going through for almost 4 years now. And now you have a complaint against the media? It's all okay when they're your echo chamber, reflecting, parroting everything you and the other libs want to push out? They're ready and willing to carry your water, but you get criticized and you suddenly... snowflake. She turns to a snowflake. Not happy. Says NBC spread false information. And the New York Post did it. We'll get into that a little bit later. By the way, of course, she was given 1 minute. 1 minute. And she actually exceeded that. Her time ran to a minute 30. I think they allowed the other 30 because that was part of the process where she is supposed to officially nominate Bernie Sanders as president. She was seconding the nomination. But again, it was all just part of the process. No, Joe Biden is still going to be the Democrat nominee. And Bill Clinton last night was then endorsing Joe Biden. And he tells us what Biden will do for you and the nation. But not really. He doesn't really tell you because they don't really want you, if you're conservative, to know what they're planning. But Bernie Sanders is already spilling the beans. He's already saying exactly what would take place the very first day Biden is in office. We'll get into that a little bit later. We've got a lot to cover over the next 2 hours. Of course, Pelosi has called back the House for an emergency meeting Saturday. She wants emergency funding for the post office, claiming it can't handle the mail-in ballots, and we're going to have a lot of people mailing in because everybody's so afraid to go vote in person. They're not afraid to go to the grocery store or get gas or go to the pharmacy or go hang out with friends. But, yeah, I'm just too scared to go vote. And she says the post office can't handle all the mail-in ballots and there's a need for millions of dollars. Congressman Mo Brooks, Republican of Alabama, calls out the lies. And libs, of course, determined to destroy our nation from within. Target, Department of Homeland Security. James Carafano will explain the plot, the dangers, and what will happen to our national security if they get their way. We also have the tale of two cities, both under Democrat control. Both show clear evidence of the Democrats' attitude when it comes to law and order and Black Lives Matter. It is so obvious. It is in your face. You can't ignore it. And with that story also includes an ad that a young black woman is running as she tries to win a congressional seat as a Republican in a Democrat stronghold. That ad is catching fire. She really doesn't have much of a chance to win. I would say if I'm going to lay bets on it, she will not win. But what she has done with her ad is reignite some new fervor to get things done and corrected, and it may be affecting even Democrats in those cities. Oh, and by the way, the next time you look up and see the Goodyear blimp, the next time you see the Goodyear blimp, think Black Lives Matter extortion. I'll explain. Let your friends and family know we're on the air. Lock and load. Ready. On the right.
You can email Larry at LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com. LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com.
So are you ready to get out from the COVID-19 scare? We might still need to be careful in some areas. I do encourage businesses to make sure your facility is clear of COVID-19. And, of course, if you open up and then a client or an employee or someone else surfaces with COVID-19, you need to reevaluate what's going on. I would encourage you to contact Wellington Environmental. They can determine at a very reasonable cost what you need to do before you open, once you are open, and as you move forward. It just makes good sense, doesn't it? Wellington Environmental, for 30 years, has been treating situations at hospitals, schools, daycare centers, private homes. 314-644-4930. 644-4930. Wellington Environmental. Be well with Wellington Environmental. I want to thank my friends at John Bill Roofing for sponsoring this segment of Larry Connors USA. John Bill Roofing, covering homes, businesses throughout the Midwest with the best quality, lowest price. John Bill Roofing. Call 1-800-NEW-ROOF. 1-800-NEW-ROOF.
Well, I started out with $1 million, gambled with a man and I won me another, bought me a gun and I robbed my brother. I'm bad, but I don't care, boys. I'm gonna be a millionaire.
This is Larry Connors USA. Larry Connors USA.
Good evening. A presidential election is the world's most important job interview. At the end, we hire a leader to help us solve problems, create opportunities, and give our kids better tomorrows. It's a tall order this year. With the COVID-19 outbreak on a path to killing 200,000 people and destroying millions of jobs and small businesses. How did Donald Trump respond? At first, he said the virus was under control and would soon disappear. When it didn't, he was on TV every day bragging on what a great job he was doing.
You know who that was, I assume. Maybe, you know, he's become so insignificant, maybe you don't know. That was former President Bill Clinton offering his endorsement in his speech last night for Joe Biden. And, of course, first line, attack Trump, attack Trump, attack Trump. Middle line, attack Trump, attack Trump. Last line, attack Trump, attack Trump. That's the whole purpose. Whole purpose. And, of course, also spread some lies if you can. The COVID issue continues to be the narrative that the left is trying to pin everything on, saying Trump blew it. We are in all this trouble with our economy and unemployment and people dying because Trump created COVID. Oh, let me back up. They didn't say he created COVID. They've come pretty darn close to it, haven't they? I should point out that was a speech, of course, Bill Clinton pre-taped to be used at the Democrat National Convention last night. And it was taped at his house in New York State, in the very state where the governor of that state, Democrat Cuomo, had thousands of deaths in nursing homes from COVID because he gave an order that nursing homes had to accept COVID patients. But it's Trump's fault. It is all Trump's fault. That's what it's going to come down to. They're never going to give you facts unless they twist and move them. And they accuse Trump of doing that all the time, but they never look back in the mirror, do they? Not once. And the idea is spread as many lies and noise as you can, and much of the public, not informed, they'll suck it up. Just like a dog thirsty on a hot summer day finally gets to the stream, lapping it all up as best he can. And that's exactly what Bill Clinton was doing last night. And, of course, for the crowd at the DNC, that's like throwing red meat chum into the waters for the sharks, exactly. And, in fact, Gretchen Whitmer, the Wisconsin governor, is that right? Yeah, I had it here now, can't find it, but she was thinking she was not on mic at one point, and she kind of said, this is effing shark week. In other words, how we're going to tear up the Trump team. And that part got out on the mic, but she didn't know it at the time. Listen, when things are live, the parts that were live, yeah, they can have a few flaws here and there. That happens. But it also shows the underlying belief and philosophy. No, we got to blame Trump for COVID. You remember where the unemployment rate was before COVID hit? And then it jumped almost to 15%, and now once again we're just hovering around 10%, I think the last check. It'll be a while maybe before we get back to 4% unemployment or so that we were seeing prior to COVID. But we're in the process of doing it if the Democrats will get out of the way or at least stand up and help us. And last night you also had Clinton claim that our unemployment rate is more than twice as high as South Korea. 2.5 times the United Kingdom's, more than 3 times Japan's. And all of that is partly true, but it's not exactly true, but they're not going to worry about the real facts. The U.S. unemployment rate did jump higher than our European and Asian allies, but that's because our nation, according to a writer for Breitbart, the U.S. favored a more flexible, generally more effective economic policy response than those other countries. Wall Street Journal even points out there's a big difference when you look at U.S. and Europe. You got to look at more than just that number. The other flaw with comparing South Korea economy to the U.S., the economies are fundamentally different. But again, do not let the facts get in the way of a good narrative, a good lie, a good story. Let me share something that a analyst for CNN wrote. This is Stephen Collinson. He wrote this, and I want to share with you what he thinks of Bill Clinton and his speech last night and the entire Democrat Party. This is a CNN analyst. It's titled, Bill Clinton's DNC Speech Shows How the Democrat Party Has Changed. The opening line, it can take Bill Clinton 5 minutes just to say hello. But that's all the time the 42nd president got on Tuesday to address the party he once dominated. Had things turned out a little differently in 2016, he would have addressed Democrats after 4 years as the country's first gentleman. Instead, he got a walk-on part in a party that left him behind as it trekked to the left. Much of his party now views Clinton's revisions on welfare, trade, and criminal justice as a betrayal, and in the hashtag MeToo era, recoils from his extramarital affairs. I'd seen stories the other day, by the way, aside from this article, I'd seen stories the other day that Democrats were told, hey, back off the hashtag MeToo thing. Don't be bringing that up and all of that stuff during our convention because we want Bill to speak, and that would be kind of embarrassing. It's kind of like the secret that everybody knows, but just don't talk about it. The article continues, a column, I should say, written by Stephen Collinson of CNN. Clinton's brief turn in this year's Democrat National Convention represented his most insignificant role at a convention. But while he might be seen as a bit of an embarrassing uncle by the party's young guns, now, that's true. What do they think of Biden? Anyway, He goes on to say, by the might be seen as the embarrassing uncle by the party's young guns, he framed the argument against Trump as few other politicians can. Why and how? Well, simply because he was a former president. Yes, Barack Obama will be speaking tonight. We'll get into the lineup for you later. And, of course, he will be giving the nomination speech for Bernie. This article points out, this column, I should say, points out, it was 1984 when Clinton first spoke at a convention to boost a ticket with another female vice presidential nominee, Geraldine Ferraro. 4 years later, the then Arkansas governor nearly torpedoed his own prospects with a windy address that drew ironic cheers when he uttered the words, in closing. They were thinking, my God, get off the stage, stop talking to you, da, 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 da. And finally when he said, in closing, everybody, whoa, yeah, glad. Now, that 1984, Geraldine Ferraro, I still want to bring that up the other day. It's a good time to discuss it now. Geraldine Ferraro, at that time, was on the ticket for the Democrats. And it was a big deal. And you remember that the debate that took place between George Bush and Ferraro, Geraldine, as they were the vice presidential nominees of their respective parties. And Bush made the remark that, yeah, we're going to get her and we're going to kind of kick ass or something like that. Pretty much that direct. And immediately, oh my God, that's so sexual. You made a reference to her body part and you talked it like that. And he was saying, we're just talking the way we do in Texas. I didn't mean anything. It wasn't sexual. I didn't mean anything. But, of course, they were not going to let him live that down. And yet here on the platform stage last night again, they bring in the biggest instigator of the hashtag MeToo movement. As you know, this Saturday, members of the House are being called back for special session. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi says we have to get in and fund the U.S. Postal Service to save it from Donald Trump and his Postmaster General. In fact, she has said, I don't trust the Postmaster General. He's trying to destroy any mail-in balloting. They're not going to be handling it correct. They say they can't. So we need an immediate $25 billion boost given right to the Postal Service. She said we have to save the post office from the president now. And saying this is so critical for this election because so many folks will be using mail-in ballots because they don't want to get out and get caught in COVID. Congressman Mo Brooks, Republican of Alabama, said this whole idea that Nancy is pushing right now, that the Postal Service just can't do the job. Well, he made his remarks on a radio program in Mobile, Alabama, Jeff Poor.
If you listen to what the Democrats are really saying, think about their argument. They are claiming that one additional piece of mail coming into your mailbox, that being your vote by mail, and the one piece going out, that is after you have voted and sent it out, is suddenly going to collapse the post office and risk our election. That is absurd. Think of all the mail that you get in your mailbox. And how one in and one out is suddenly going to be something the post office can't handle?
Of course they can. But there were plans to start making changes on the Postal Service. And as you have noted, and they've made a big noise about it, post office boxes on the corners are being taken away or locked up. And the locked up thing is a lie. The pictures of the post office boxes, on the corner being locked, were out of Burbank, California for 2016 when thieves were breaking into the mailboxes trying to steal checks or whatever else they could get. And taking boxes off the corners, the Obama-Biden administration took almost 4,000 off. And they also laid off a lot of postal workers. Right now you have Nancy Pelosi and the Democrats working with the unions representing the employees of the Postal Service and acting like we're the ones who will protect your job. In other words, looking for a block vote from the union. That's understandable. But again, Mo Brooks says they are peddling a big, fat lie.
I contend that it is an outright lie on the part of the Democrats. They know that what they're saying is not the truth, and they're going to try to misrepresent as best as possible in order to deceive enough voters to be able to prevail.
Do you think it works?
With some voters, it does work, particularly with the echo effect from the fake news media. The major networks, the major newspapers, they'll parrot whatever the Democratic Party wants them to parrot.
That's exactly true, and that is why it's so important that you think for yourself. You don't have to listen to this program and say, oh, Larry's absolutely right 100%. I don't want you to do that. I want you to do your own thinking. I have my opinion. Your opinion may be in lockstep with me, or it might not. That's fine. Now, in the wake of these threats from Democrats and protesters surrounding his home in D.C. and also Greensboro, North Carolina, the Postmaster General said there will be no operational changes at the Postal Service until after the November 3rd presidential election. So you can cease and desist. We're not going to do anything that anyone would construe as trying to damage your possibility of mailing in votes. But that's not fast enough. The Democrats already had that ready. They're already claimed the damage is already done. You've already done the damage. How about the damage the Democrats are allowing and almost encouraging in rioting across the nation? Let's take a look at that in a moment.
You can connect with Larry on Twitter at Larry Connors USA.
This is Larry Connors, USA.
Larry Connors, USA.
So let me clarify something I was saying a moment ago about Governor Gretchen Whitmer, the Michigan governor. She was standing at the podium anticipating her Democrat National Convention speech. And there was a hot mic as she's saying, it's not just Shark Week, it's Shark Week, MFers. Talking about how basically the Democrats are going to tear into the Republicans. It's Shark Week, mother effers. But she said the whole word. And then she got a crowd. They love it. They love it. I have to admit there are times I cannot believe Nancy Pelosi has done this. I mean, I think the woman cannot do something worse than what she has already or say something. Can she? Can she? Yes, Larry, she can. And she did. She's now claiming the Republican Party has been hijacked. The Republican Party has been hijacked by Donald Trump's cult. She says a cult-like group of people. A cult-like group. Well, how would you describe what's happened to the Democrats and being hijacked by Black Lives Matter or Antifa and the others rioting in the streets? How would you define that cult? Well, I don't want to talk about that. They want to talk only about the cult they see surrounding Trump. And some of you listening right now, you're part of that cult. You were part of the deplorables as well. You just had to bear it. And yeah, this violence in the streets. You know, we pointed out the other day that the Portland mayor, Ted Wheeler, finally came out and condemned rioting when they're setting fires. He said, if you're setting fires to building and people are inside, that's attempted murder. It's wrong. You think? You finally came to that conclusion. And then this pickup driver that was brutally attacked, the video caught this, he's yanked out of his truck and beaten senseless and kicked in the head. Now the Portland mayor says, I denounce all violence, all violence. Does that include the attacks on police? By the way, the acting Customs and Border Patrol Commissioner pointed out something that I know you've noticed already. He said this beating of this mob attacking the truck driver, he said, this is Democrats putting politics above public safety. He said, but the second layer of this tragedy is it's not getting attention on mainstream media. They're looking away, and he's absolutely right. They're not looking at that event. They're not playing that on their mainstream. No, no, no. Because it shows the lawlessness in the streets. They're not going to do that. And the push to defund police, get rid of police, continues. Denver City Council, Denver City Councils shut down a proposal 11-1. The proposal replaced the Denver Police Department with a newly appointed peace force. If that bill had passed, it would have been on the November ballot. Thank God in Denver City, somebody, many of them, I should say 11 of them, said no way. But this one councilwoman said we need a holistic, anti-racist, public-oriented approach to public safety to get the police gone and put in our peace force. Former Attorney General Eric Holder on MSNBC said something I want you to make sure you hear. He said, you need to wake up. He said, you need to wake up for this election. He said, it is that important. And folks, I agree. It is important. Wake up. Get involved. And, of course, the effort also now turning the attack on the Department of Homeland Security. James Carafano coming up.
You can hear podcasts of this program at Larry Connors USA Facebook. Larry Connors USA Facebook. This is Larry Connors USA. Larry Connors USA.
Recently, the ACLU said we want to abolish the Department of Homeland Security, that it undermines the Constitution, destroys our republic, and that President Trump has converted the Department of Homeland Security into our government's most notable badge of shame. Joining us now, James Carafano with the Heritage Foundation. Welcome aboard, Jim.
Hey, good to be with you.
I'm looking at an article you wrote in a column for FoxNews.com, and you were talking about how the cancel culture is now targeting the DHS. Go ahead, sir.
So here's the ACLU is the one that, you know, kind of floated this idea. Here's their first complaint. Is it violates the Constitution? Well, if you actually look at the Department of Homeland Security, every function, every authority the department has virtually was in the government before 9/11. All 9/11 did was take a bunch of agencies and activities, put them under the department so they could be more effective. Look, all this has been through the courts. It's passed by Congress. There's no constitutional here. That's just a lie. Their second complaint was lack of oversight, which is laughable because the Department of Homeland Security, because it was created from all these other agencies and nobody wanted to give up their jurisdiction, they actually have more congressional oversight than any other agency in government. There's over 100 committees and subcommittees which have jurisdiction over Homeland. So that's laughable.
If we go back, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, sorry.
I was going to say, if we go back to 9/11 and what happened and how it all developed, it became very clear at that point. We had various agencies had various pieces of information, and they had their own little fiefdoms. They didn't want to share, would not share, thought it's only our intel. We don't need to share. And the whole idea then was, as you said, to bring it all under one umbrella, and everybody thought, or at that time, briefly, everybody was all in favor of it, but it didn't take long. It didn't take long for them to start complaining and saying it's just another way to undermine, quote, our democracy. And the left only says that when they really don't care about our democracy.
Well, you know, the irony, of course, was is the Bush administration actually did not want to establish a Department of Homeland Security. It was actually the opposition party in the Congress that, because they wanted to say, well, we're tough on national security too. They were the ones that actually proposed the idea and insisted that there be a department. So it's really kind of ironic that the calls to abolish a department are now coming from the people that insisted that we create a department to begin with. So that's a little weird. But, you know, to your point about why we did this. So perfect example. If you remember the Times Square bomber, that was the guy that set up a bomb to go off in Times Square. It didn't go off. If it had, it would have been catastrophic.
Right.
But he escaped, right? And then because DHS could link all these things together, they figured out who he was, and they managed to pick him up at the airport before he could flee the country. Before 9/11, that would have never happened.
And it's only because you had an existing connection of change and link of information, right?
Yeah, so I'll give you another example. So the Federal Protective Service, that's been around forever. They're basically charged with protecting federal buildings. When these buildings were attacked, they don't have the manpower to really ramp up to protect them. But because they're part of DHS now, they can call on other parts of the department to basically back them up, which is exactly what happened. So this gets to the heart of the criticism from the ACLU, which is basically they don't like Trump. They don't like any of Trump's policies. Therefore, they think we should get rid of the department because they don't like the guy that's in charge.
And every time they get the opportunity, they want again to say that it's out of control and not being overseen properly. You pointed out that more than a hundred agencies have an oversight on Homeland Security. Isn't that right?
Yeah. So if you add up every committee and subcommittee in the Congress that has some jurisdiction over a part of Homeland Security, it adds up to over 100.
So when they say that DHS is our most notable badge of shame, what the hell are they talking about?
Well, what they're talking about is, you know, people said defund the police, and so people gave all kinds of money to Black Lives Matter, and the ACLU, they want a cut of the action. So, you know, they've come up with something to defund now, and I think they're hoping it'll be a fundraising campaign for them.
Ah. Follow the money as usual, right?
Well, if you think back, you know, the ACLU went apoplectic when the Patriot Act was passed. And, you know, we could have these discussions. I had discussions with people from the ACLU. I said, look, okay, there are things in the law you don't like. I mean, there are things in the law maybe we don't like. We could actually sit down together and say, you know, here are some changes to the law that we might think would make this a better law. But that was not the stance the ACLU took. They essentially did the same thing they're doing now. They said, this is a threat to democracy. This is a violation of the Constitution. We're all going to die. They used it as a massive fundraising gig. And, of course, they didn't get rid of the law because the law was perfectly constitutional. It's still in effect. It hasn't destroyed democracy. It's actually going to catch a lot of terrorists.
Well, and
that's their playbook.
You mentioned...
Scare Americans,
yeah,
raise a bunch of money.
You mentioned the Patriot Act. Jim, I have to say, we really need to change the name. The word patriot really offends me. I don't think...
I didn't come up with it. but here's the thing, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, in fairness to the ACLU, okay, they don't like the Patriot Act. Virtually every legal authority that is in the Patriot Act were authorities that the government already had before 9/11, that all the law did really was say, you can use these authorities to go after terrorists. And so when I would challenge the ACLU, I said, look, you've always hated these laws. I get that. But you're saying it's because of the act, and you know it's not. I mean, you're lying to people saying that the Patriot Act created all these things you don't like. The reality was, they're already in government. It's the same thing here. They don't want the border control. They don't want illegal aliens arrested. But the government did all those things before 9/11.
The other part of the argument, of course, is that many Americans feel that it can be abused. I'm talking about patriots and conservatives that say, you know, the FISA Act, what we saw happen with that this stuff can be used against the people if the wrong president is in the White House.
Well, of course, you know, we see under the Obama administration that they abused FISA. Any instrument of government can be abused. That's why we have courts. That's why we have an executive branch. That's why we have Congress. And that's also why we have elections. So nobody can permanently control power. And even if they do abuse these instruments, eventually the system works it out. But again, if you look at the long list of complaints that the ACLU has, basically they're going after the administration because the administration's actually enforcing the laws that are on the books, immigration or the border or protection of federal property. They're actually doing what the law requires. But the ACLU doesn't like the laws. But that's not what they tell you. They don't tell you we don't like these laws. They say your government is evil, right? And they're doing terrible things and unconstitutional things. And they're not. The government's just following the law. And they'll never just be straight up and say, look, we just don't like the way the law is written. Change the law.
You're listening to James Carafano of the Heritage Foundation. In the last minute, let me switch gears. Before you joined us, I was reading a quote from the acting Customs Border Patrol Commissioner, Mark Morgan, talking about this Portland mob beating that's been, you know, repeated a lot of places,
right.
Video, but not on mainstream media. They're ignoring it. And again, he points out that's another part of the tragedy, that when it comes to showing the violence and the rioting in the street, the mainstream media is looking away as if everything is being done civil and Trump sent in federal agents to attack peaceful protesters.
Oh, it's an absolute double standard. There's no question about that. They harp on the violence that's politically convenient for them, and they ignore the violence and abuses that isn't. It is literally a page out of the Pravda playbook.
And I don't see it changing, but I've been stressing to the audience over and over again that this election is vital. And even Attorney General, former Attorney General Holder, I read a quote from him a moment ago talking about how important this is.
Well, I got to tell you, look, you know, people could say what they want about social media and big tech companies and anything else, but let's be honest. If it wasn't for Twitter today, none of us would know what's really going on in Portland. It's because of some courageous citizen reporting, and it's all over the internet, and it's all over Twitter, that we know about that. So, you know, I think technology works for all sides. And mainstream, the New York Times, Washington Post, ABC, NBC, and they've all failed, even Fox, they've all failed us. There's unbelievable violence going on in our streets and these cities, and nobody's talking about it.
All right, James, again, we always appreciate having you on board, sir.
Thanks for having me, brother.
You bet. James Carafano with the Heritage Foundation. He mentioned the violence in all of our cities. I'll again tell you that in the next hour, we're going to have a tale of two cities, both Democrat-controlled, and talk about the violence inside those cities, and it's nothing new. It's nothing. It's been going on. It's been allowed. It's continued to grow and expand, and even the folks that are caught in the midst of it are recognizing this is out of control. And who do they have to blame? They're Democrat leaders. That's exactly right. Coming up the next segment, Mayor de Blasio having to back up when it came to dealing with the homeless people. We have that. And wait till you hear how much de Blasio's wife is getting for little things she wants when other people are suffering. And if you look up at the Goodyear blimp in the future, I want you to remember something coming up.
Someday, when I'm awfully low, when the world is cold, I will feel a glow just thinking of you and the way you look tonight.
This is Larry Connors, USA.
Larry Connors, USA.
So Bill de Blasio has been trying to care for the homeless in New York City, and he's following the agenda we've seen on the West Coast, and that is put them into hotels. Either commandeer a hotel if you need it or work out some kind of payment, but you're not going to pay full rate, and you're going to convince the hotels to allow homeless people to live there. The idea is to get them out of off the street and out of the shelters so they're not all congregated because of COVID and move them into hotels. He's now saying that we are going to begin to back away from it because residents in some of the neighborhoods are complaining about the quality of life. You think? Of course. We already know that. So thousands in the New York area were moved into hotel rooms. De Blasio originally did resist that. but then caved in saying, yeah, that's what we need to do. And, of course, they're seeing the same thing that they saw in California. Visibly intoxicated men congregating in the street without masks, using drugs in public, doing drug deals in their hotel rooms, and also prostitution. I guess they just thought that if we put them in a hotel room, they will be more acceptable citizens. And while they're battling over that and the money, take note of this. While they don't have any money in New York City for regular trash picks, and they can't really maintain their city parks, Bill de Blasio's wife has a 14-member staff. Her staffers cost the city taxpayers nearly $2 million a year. $2 million a year. In fact, one of the issues have been noted that a $70,000 photographer is on staff, or a videographer, I should say, that she used to capture her baking cookies during the pandemic. A speechwriter, $117,000. And this is a city that's facing layoffs at 22,000 municipal workers because of the coronavirus budget crisis. She has 14 staffers, double the amount she had in 2018. It's also pointed out that there had been a team lunch in the Bronx back in January. According to her PR director, made everybody aware of it, he's paid $143,000. And yet you have the mayor saying, we don't have any money to pick up overflowing waste bins and maintain the parks. But the first lady is going to get what she wants. Hey, I guess it goes back. Happy wife, happy life, I guess. The Goodyear blimp, the next time you see it, I want you to keep this story in mind. There's been a slide that got leaked, apparently, from a Goodyear diversity training session. The employees were brought together to be lectured on what's acceptable and what's unacceptable for the employees to support. And the slide is part of the zero tolerance policy issued during the Goodyear diversity training, deemed the terms Blue Lives Matter unacceptable. To say All Lives Matter, unacceptable. MAGA attire, being, I guess, a MAGA hat, MAGA shirt, are encouraging MAGA, unacceptable. In fact, politically affiliated slogans are material, unacceptable. What Goodyear has decided, based on this slide that apparently got leaked from this diversity training session, the acceptable slogans to the company include Black Lives Matter and also lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender pride. The employees can push that, promote it, those two items, as much as they want. But you cannot say Blue Lives Matter, nor can you say All Lives Matter. An employee apparently took a photo of the slide, and it was apparently already presented at a Topeka plant by an area manager, and they say the slide came from the corporate office right out of Akron, Ohio. The employee wanted to remain anonymous for obvious reasons, said, if someone wants to wear a BLM shirt in here, then cool. I'm not going to get offended at it, but at the same time, if someone's not going to be able to wear something that is politically based, even in the farthest stretch of the imagination, that's discriminatory. If we're talking about equality, then we need to have equality. If not, it's discrimination. Reaction from Goodyear, officially a statement saying, Goodyear is committed to fostering an inclusive and respectful workplace. It's not inclusive if you're banning things like Blue Lives Matter, All Lives Matter, and yet you're giving pass to the other. Another case of a major corporation being extorted, and they accept it because they don't dare, otherwise they'll be called racist. A Tale of Two Cities coming up in the next segment, and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez making a speech last night. And we're being told if Biden is elected, what will happen? Bernie Sanders is spilling the beans. Stand by, please.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
You've been listening to Larry Connors USA. Please listen to previous and future podcasts.